Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. Researchers have long known that there's a strong link between stress and overall health. With year-on-year findings on stress-related diseases like heart disease, obesity, diabetes, chronic fatigue syndrome, and those leading to what are now being termed deaths of despair, such as anxiety, depression, and sheer overwhelm, reinforcing that research, it would appear that something has gone very wrong with our physical, emotional and psychological capacity to cope with life in the 21st century. Carl Davis is a coach, author and trainer who specialises in helping individuals and organisations to overcome stress-related health challenges, optimise their well-being and perform more effectively at work, home and in life. An Associate Fellow of the British Psychological Society, he's the creator of Energy Flow Coaching and author of the book The Intelligent Body, in which he offers a new understanding of the relationship between hidden stress in the body, emotional energy and chronic health challenges. Carl Davis joins me now to share how stress causes disease and to offer a metaphysical perspective and approach that is proving to be singularly successful in reversing chronic fatigue and pain from the inside out. Carl Davis, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Sandy. It's great to be here.
Carl, you originally qualified as a chartered occupational psychologist and you began your career in management consulting before moving into healthcare. Why did you move into this arena?
That's a good question, really. I suppose when I was in consulting, I did a whole variety of things from management training, executive coaching. I did research and evaluation for government departments. The thing I was particularly interested in was coaching. But back in those days, when you were coaching somebody, you were, I guess you were kind of talking about them and their skill set within their environment at work. And I was... There was something about me that I wanted to get deeper with a person. I wanted to try to make deeper lasting change. So I went and did a lot of therapy training, started a little practice, and then I met a medical doctor over here in the UK who had a particular interest in chronic fatigue syndrome. And this is back in the early 2000s. And it was, I guess, a time when there was nothing that conventional medicine offered for sufferers of chronic health challenges like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel. So we thought we'd sort of struck gold in as much as we had the beginnings of a process, a theory and an approach which was seeming to bear fruit. It was seeming to work, and we were finding that the clients that we were working with were having a reversal of symptoms. So that was the transition. It was almost a naive sense of this: we've got something here, this is brilliant, and we're going to change the world. I guess like lots of ideas that are new, I think it was probably a little bit before its time, because it being a mind-body notion, anything outside the world of metaphysics and spirituality tends to see mind-body as very separate things. And certainly back then, I think we've changed a lot in the last 15 years, and I think people are far more open to these ideas now. But certainly back then, when you talked about stress, our emotion, and then you talked about a physical health challenge, what we found was people were just hostile towards us. But that was the kind of the change. It felt like a bit of a calling, really, if that makes sense.
Now, your approach you call energy flow coaching. Why did you title it that?
That's a good question, really. I guess it came from the fact that what the approach is, it's a framework and a set of principles, really. And what falls out of that are a number of exercises that I use with my clients. I had one particular exercise that I called the energy flow state technique, and this was at a time when I was kind of branding myself, and I didn't have a name for the approach. And I was getting lots of ex-clients that were coming to me saying, you know, we're getting people who are asking what we've done, and we say we've worked with you, but they're saying, so what is it he does? So I thought, you know, the closest thing that kind of came to my mind was energy flow coaching. But I guess what prompted that for me was that the work is all about aligning a person to their own flow, their energy flow. And it's a little bit different than the kind of the more conventional idea of a flow state. So when we think about a person being in flow state, that's often when they're in a peak performance state. Whereas for me, if a person is in their own energy flow, it means they're aligned with the kind of expanded sense of who they are. They're in touch with themselves, and they're therefore flowing. So that's probably the essence of it. I see it as being, you know, the ultimate aim of working with a person is to realign them with their own energy flow.
That's an interesting one, because, you know, I've read many reports recently that we don't really know ourselves. We think we do, but we don't. And in fact, everything that probably constitutes who we are, or at least, you know, the large majority of it, sits in our unconscious. How then can we create flow? How can we, you know, align to ourselves if we don't know who we are?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? I think we have the capacity, and I think we have an increasing capacity to be able to be conscious and develop an awareness of self. So that, I guess that's the first thing. I know, you know, there are plenty of people within science that will say we have no free will and we're like robots and all the rest of it. But I think we have a degree of free will. I think we have an increasing ability to be aware of who we are. And from an energy flow coaching perspective, we exist on a spectrum. So what science might tell us is, well, there is no one version of us. From an energy flow coaching perspective, we exist on this spectrum whereby at one end there's a limited self, and that's the version of us that believes we are directly affected by external events. It's almost a bit like being in the Matrix. So we live in a space of scarcity. We're continually focused on outside life. At the polar opposite end of the spectrum is an expanded sense of self. And this is where we can have a sense of being connected to all that is. We are a flow of consciousness. Now, I think that we exist on this spectrum where we're bouncing around. And the knowing oneself comes from, to a certain extent, a giving up of a desire to intellectually define oneself, but it comes then through feeling and opening up to releasing having to fix outside life, and a recognition that it's entirely possible at any point in time for me to feel okay, because when I'm in an expanded sense of self, I'm connected to all of that is, and in that sense of self, you know, in that expanded sense, there is my natural state is compassion, is joy, is love. So that emerges simply by being in an expanded space. So the who we are is not some intellectual personality notion that we have to kind of try to strive to find, because as soon as we try to define that, we sort of lose it and we shunt ourselves down this consciousness spectrum towards a limited, small self. So I think that, you know, much of my work is about trying to simplify things by allowing ourselves to feel what we feel and recognizing that, right, well, there's no single version of me. I'm a flow of consciousness, and how I feel in this moment is just an expression of how I feel in this moment. And how I feel and my perception of myself and life at any given moment in time is probably a reflection of where I lie on that consciousness spectrum, more than it is about what outside life is doing. Because for the most part, people are in that state, in that paradigm, which I think is a misguided paradigm, where they think, well, outside life directly causes how I feel, so what I have to do is manipulate outside life. And of course, most people spend an inordinate amount of time in their head thinking about stuff, trying to fix how they feel, or trying to fix outside life. And they get caught in this spiral of always trying to fix life, always trying to fix how they feel, and therefore they get stuck in a limited self space. And then they try to define themselves in that space as well. And we don't need to do any of that. So I think we can kind of almost like let go of trying to define who we are.
Do you not find it an interesting paradox that, you know, I mean, over the last 20 years or so, there's been an explosion in research, in discoveries, and in books that are, you know, helping us understand the mind-body connection. But, you know, if you go back 20, 30, 40 years before we even understood any of this, people weren't doing so much soul-searching and self-searching. We were healthier, and we're getting less healthy, but we know more. How does that happen?
I think we're probably disconnected, aren't we, from who we are as human beings, as spiritual beings. I think certainly we've, from a very human perspective, we lived in alignment with nature. We lived in small tribes of probably about 150 people for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. In the last 200 years, we've seen this rapid, accelerated change, and we are completely out of balance with our environment. We're out of balance with ourselves. I think that with the kind of increasing need to be on, the increasing need to be seen to be engaged in life through Facebook and Twitter and all the rest of it, we are increasingly externally focused. So people are trying to match themselves to life. And probably even if we go back 20 years, there was a sense of status with the kind of job you had and how big was your house and how big was your car and all this kind of stuff. But now it's beyond that because of Facebook and all the rest of it. You've got to be seen to be living the dream. You've got to be seen to be up and excited and experienced in life. So there's this huge pressure, I think, on people to match some unrealistic expectation of life. And I think from a health perspective, we medicate ourselves too quickly. So I think there is a desire to fix ourselves, and we don't allow ourselves to have an experience of being human. It's interesting. I was given a talk last week, and the idea of being resilient came up, and one lady in the audience said, young people are not resilient anymore, are they? And I was kind of expressing this, really, that essentially we have a natural inbuilt resilience, but we don't allow ourselves to reset. Usually what happens is, if you think about it, the only time we allow ourselves to go through a process is when we are in bereavement. If we're grieving a loss, we recognize that. We recognize a person has to go through a process, and we don't try to fix them. But I, you know, from my sense of it, in every other aspect of life, we don't give ourselves an opportunity to go through a process of what I would say is an emotional system reset. What we do is we immediately, you know, we resist what we feel, and there's a bit of instinct in there, but we're trying to fix ourselves. And the painful irony is, in the frantically trying to fix ourselves, we end up making ourselves worse because we're not allowing ourselves to be human. So I think there's probably a whole host of issues that feed into this, but it certainly is interesting that we know more than we have ever known. There's more medicines than they've ever been before, yet we are sicker than we've ever been. But yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to a disconnection, and I suspect the rapid rate of change with our consciousness shift is playing into that as well. So, you know, spiritual awakening is something that's kind of happening a lot, and I think that is resulting in people kind of breaking down So there's a whole load of factors, I think, that play into that.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest today is chartered psychologist, therapist, coach and consultant Carl Davis. And we're talking about his metaphysical perspective on how stress causes diseases. We'll be back with more after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Carl Davis, you say in your book that a body can be in a state of stress without having any conscious awareness of the fact. I think I'm probably a very good example of that. I'm told again and again that I just seem to power through it all. But sooner or later, the body has to protest, doesn't it?
It does. I think that there are two really important kind of facts about stress that are often overlooked. And I think that's the first. My sense of it is that people generally think that stress is a kind of nervous, agitated feeling, a discomfort inside when things are not going well, when they're overwhelmed, when their boss is giving them too much work. But I think that's an emotional feeling. So stress is a set of measurable, objective events that takes place within our body. So I think, yeah, that idea that a human, an animal, our body can be in a perpetual state of stress and us not be aware of it. And that's the kind of thing. If it is in a state of stress, it begins to break down. The second really important fact, I think, about stress, and this is what brings mind and body as one, is that regardless of the type of stressor, the stress response is exactly the same. So what I mean by that is that you could have a car accident, you could have a bad case of flu, you could lose a job, you could be over-exercising, you could be having excessive alcohol intake, you could have poor sleep. The stress response in the body that's triggered is exactly the same. And I think the very idea that our emotional stress, a buildup of emotion, can trigger the stress response in exactly the same way as being hit over the head with a frying pan is kind of interesting, because again, you know, for the most part, even when people, in my experience of it, even when people say that they believe that mind and body are one, they will still often say, oh yeah, but that's kind of psychological or physical. And whilst I do acknowledge that if somebody has a health challenge, symptoms can present themselves as psychological or physical symptoms. When it comes to the stress response, it's mind and body are one. So I think those are two kind of really important facts that we have to bear in mind. And it's a bit worrying, isn't it? Because I think, you know, in modern day life, we are, what we're usually faced with are a lot of low level stresses. Now, you know, just the quick kind of caveat to that is that my view is that our experience of life emerges through us. That's a kind of an inside out approach. So it's not necessarily that life triggers or directly causes how we feel, but it's emerging through us. But even so, our perceptions of life and the meaning that we imprint upon life are what gives rise to some of the feelings that we have. And if we're not aware of those feelings, then that can be low level stress, effectively. People often think that stress is big events, and it doesn't have to be. And in most instances where it's a problem, it isn't. It's low level stresses. You know, back in our days of living in tribes, when we were being chased by a bear through the forest, we'd go into the fight or flight response. Our body would be in the stress response. We'd either escape the bear or get eaten. But once we'd escaped that bear, then the stress response kind of reset itself. We were very aware of it. Whereas these days, we don't have one major stressor like that for the most part. What we have is a series of low-level stresses that we kind of detune from. We kind of completely become desensitized to. So we're just not aware of it. So we're not aware that our body is in this perpetual state of stress.
I think one of the things I'd observed that seems to cause deep stress is ongoing frustration. Being in a situation where you have no control over it, you know, and that could be a work situation where you've got, you know, impossible deadlines or, you know, difficult people that you're working with or family members that are sick and you can't do anything about it. I've noticed again and again that kind of frustration is what builds up in people to the point where they explode or they get sick.
Yeah, I'd say there's probably 2 points there. There's 2 points that academics would tell us. One is that if we view stress as being something that's dangerous, interestingly, it's more likely to be dangerous. Those people that think that stress is kind of good for them and spurs them on, it tends to be the case that their health is less likely to be damaged. So that's one thing. The second kind of interesting idea is the idea of what academics would call the locus of control. So if we believe that we're being controlled by something outside of us, then our stress levels are much higher. Whereas if we believe that I am in control of what I'm doing, then, you know, my stress levels are much lower. So one of the things I always encourage my clients to step into is an empowerment space where, really, regardless of what's going on, they allow themselves to believe that it's in, you know, what I do is entirely down to me. So, you know, if we look at a ridiculous example, if somebody points a gun at my head and asks for my wallet, I would suggest I'm in a better space stress-wise to retain the idea that it's entirely up to me whether I want to hand over my wallet, whether I want to take a bullet, or whether I want to try to bat away their gun and run for it. If I retain that sense of it's down to me, I'm in control of me, then my stress level will be lower than if I allow myself to slip into a kind of a victim space where I believe it's beyond my control. I mean, I get your point about expectations as well, but that also feeds in. There's a really interesting thing, and I do appreciate the stuff that I said earlier. It was probably a bit heavy, and I don't think it's easy to get, but we do very much get caught in that loop that what drives everything we do is how we feel. And if we believe that something outside of us is causing us to feel something, then we'll do something to try to change what it is outside of us. If you can even for a moment believe that, do you know what, it's entirely possible for me to drift back up to the back of my consciousness spectrum towards my expanded self, which I personally believe is our default setting. If you believe that even by doing nothing, I can automatically drift up a bit, which means it's entirely possible in any moment for me to feel okay, you start trying desperately to change what's going on outside. What that means is that you're not on this hamster wheel of frantically trying to fix how you feel by trying to fix outside life. Because I think that's ultimately the spiral that we can get caught in, which leads us to explode. It's because there's that sense that this happening out here is making me feel something. I desperately have to change this. But deep in our core, deep in our soul, we know that actually, one, it's not that life directly causes how I feel. Life, how I feel emerges and flows through me. Two, I cannot control outside life anyway. So now that's not even, you know, being in that kind of expanded space is not, that's not going to mean that I don't feel anything, because I absolutely would. But it means that I can have a recognition that it's entirely possible that even though this is still going on, if I don't try to frantically fix it, it's entirely possible that I could feel okay within 5 minutes, within 10 minutes, within an hour, or just in the morning. And what that enables me to do is deal with whatever the problem is from not a kind of frustrated, stressed, agitated space, but from a clearer space with clarity of mind. And that really is means that I'm approaching whatever it is I'm doing more aligned with my true self rather than from a space of reacting. So I know it's a kind of difficult concept to get, but I think to some extent we all have an experience of this. Most people have had the experience where they've been frustrated or angry or annoyed of an evening. They've gone to bed, and they've that reset has kind of kicked in, and they've woke up in the next morning. Life circumstances have not changed, but they feel different. And I think we all have that. And if we can allow ourselves to believe that, all right, well, I don't have to frantically fix what's going on out there to fix how I feel. What I can do is I can feel how I feel right now, and maybe there's nothing I need to change out there. Maybe I just need to feel what I feel. And by doing that, my natural emotional system reset will begin to kick in, and I'll drift back at my spectrum, and I'll actually begin to feel okay. And then when I'm in a clearer, more aligned space, the decision I make about going forward will probably be a better one, because it'll come from that deeper wisdom within me.
But many people seem to have enormous trouble being able to regulate that kind of thing, or even understand, you know, what their feelings are. I mean, it's, you know, we're seeing suicide, you know, rapidly escalating amongst teens. We're seeing, you know, suicides in the news from adults who we think are very capable, strong people. Clearly, you know, people are getting to a point of such pain that the only way to deal with it is to make it stop, and not in, you know, the healthiest way possible. I mean, This is something that's indicative of a very sick society. How do we teach our children that they can have, you know, there are other ways to deal with this? I mean, not everybody's got access to you. Not everybody can afford coaching. You know, what do we need to do in society to change this, to help, you know, people develop resilience and an understanding of their feelings and empower them?
You know, it's a big question, isn't it? It's a big question. I think that I wonder if we are doing it. Possibly we are. I think there's a push pull that's happening here, whereby social media is pulling people externally, but there probably is an increased emphasis on well being as well, and that emphasis on well being can be inviting people to pay attention to how they feel. So we do need a cascading of knowledge. We do need a dissemination of these sorts of ideas. And we do need to be encouraging people to balance their energy, to get back in touch with themselves, to allow themselves to feel. But I think that obviously we're living in kind of crazy times as well, aren't we, where the world feels like it's falling apart. And that's obviously not, it's kind of at one level not helping. But you know, I think if I had the answer, a definitive answer to that question, maybe I'd be really, really rich. I don't know.
So tell me what energy flow coaching offers that traditional therapeutic methods don't.
I guess there's probably a few things, really. A lot of it, if we're talking about therapeutic methods that are conventional, they tend to have a focus on manipulating cognition. So the idea of changing the way you think to change the way you feel. What we know now is that's an antiquated idea, and actually our emotions affect our thinking more than our thinking affects our emotion. The other thing I think is that historically we've thought about emotion as being something that's in the past. So there's the idea of talking about our emotion. So from an energy flow coaching perspective, emotion is much more of it's a much more functional than that. It kind of does two things, really. It's alerting us to the extent to which we are deviating from our true self, if you will. So, and therefore it's giving us this opportunity to act in alignment with kind of who we really are in that moment. But in a simple way of looking at that, it's a functional way of giving us a prompt. It's a feedback. It's a feedback in much the same way as if you feel hunger, or if you're walking down the street and a stone pops in your shoe and you feel a sharp pain in your foot, that pain is alerting you. So emotion, I would say, is not something that we need to talk about. It's not something that we need to talk about from the past. It's actually, it's ongoing. We all have emotion that's ongoing now. And kind of what happens is that our emotion is a non-conscious process. So, you know, it's what that means. This is going on regardless. What's supposed to happen, ideally, is that emotions, non-conscious emotion, triggers feelings. We have feelings, and then ideally we take action on those feelings in much the same way as hunger. You get a rumbling, and then you go and eat something. What we know is entirely possible is for us to block feelings. We know that people can block feelings of hunger. We know people can block their feelings that come from emotions. So that's when problems ensue. So that is another major difference, I suppose. So we don't look to manipulate our thinking, because I view thinking as being kind of an end result of what our emotion is. So it's looking at emotion in this functional way. And the other big piece is this kind of inside out view. Rather than frantically trying to fix outside life or frantically trying to fix how I feel, it's about recognizing that I am a flow of consciousness, and that what my perceptions of myself or my perceptions of life at any given time are more a reflection of my state of consciousness than they are outside life. The majority of people are stacking that notion of blaming life and trying to fix something outside of themselves. And because the kind of intrinsic truth of life is that, well, we can't do that. You can't change anything necessary. You can't control anything outside of yourself. There's going to be an inherent tension that resides within that action, within that assumption that I've got to change life to change how I feel. So those are the main kind of aspects, really. There are patterns around which we experience our feelings. There are patterns around which we experience symptoms if you're suffering from a health challenge. So part of what we do is look to unearth those patterns so that a person can have an overall view of who they are, because history repeats itself. People tend to face the same challenges over and over again. The same things crop up. You know, people often say, oh, I always got the same boyfriend, or I've changed jobs, but I seem to have the same boss as I did in the last organization. And of course, that is that's a reflection of what is going on within them. They're inviting that into their lives. So we're looking at emotion. We're looking at this being a feedback. We're not looking about trying to change thinking. We're looking at, you know, my experience of life being something that flows through me and is a reflection of my state of consciousness. And what shows up in my life is something that I'm unconsciously creating. So it's combining those elements, really, and I think that gives it a kind of unique flavour.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with chartered psychologist, therapist, coach and consultant Carl Davies, whose book, The Intelligent Body, presents a metaphysical perspective on how stress causes disease and how we can reverse chronic fatigue and pain from the inside out. We'll be back with more after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Carl Davis, can you tell us about some of the bigger transformations that you've seen in your coaching practice?
I guess it's transformations on a few levels, really. The main ones involve people moving from being really, really ill to being perfectly fine. One of the ones which I remember touched me a great deal was I had a lady who came to see me with fibromyalgia, and when she came to see me, she came into my office on crutches, and she was talking about how the next step was a wheelchair for her, and which she was dreading, but she couldn't walk very far. And then she went through the process with me, and I remember being on vacation in Spain and having a text message from her saying she'd run a charity 5K race. So that was, you know, that's a physical transformation, I think, that people can experience. So it's entirely possible for symptoms to be reversed. I do, you know, with this sort of work, because it kind of goes deep and it goes into the essence of who people are, there are instances where people kind of completely change sort of who they are. They have an entirely different sense of who they are. It's, you know, I remember having a lady when she came to see me, it was kind of interesting really, because she was a Cher tribute act, and she did the kind of pubs and clubs in South Wales here. And her day job was working for a newspaper, and she came in and she told me, you know, she hadn't worked for a while because she had chronic fatigue syndrome, but she couldn't understand why she got ill, because she was living a dream. And then after a number of sessions, we began to kind of dig deeper into and have her experience a little bit more of the essence of who she is, she began to have the realization that she actually had hated her previous life. And in doing so, this new person emerged. So, you know, and of course, what came with that was her symptoms went. So she now is, you know, living an entirely different life without symptoms, a very different person from that person before. So I think that, you know, my sense of it is that illness very often presents itself when we're out of alignment with who we are. And I know it's almost like a spiritual platitude that, but I deeply believe it. I think that we have this feedback, our body gives us feedback, and I think it does so firstly through uncomfortable feelings, and if we don't pay attention to those uncomfortable feelings, it's almost as if our body turns up the volume and begins to send symptoms. So when we come back and align more with a sense of what I would say our true self, or you could say our soul, well, I think when we do that, then we begin to experience health. And I think, you know, a crucial bit is that because identity is such a strong driver of behaviour, people often end up clinging to this sense of identity, which is not really who they are, sort of like more of who they're not really than who they actually are. So they become this sort of person. And we have to, you know, my work is trying to get them back and begin to feel their way back to more of the essence of who they are. So that's the kind of transformation that can take place. And there is a little bit of ensuing chaos, as there often is, as we know with what's going on the planet at the moment. When there's a breaking down of the old, there's a building up of the new. But when we can experience that, then we tend to have more clarity of mind as well, and we tend to, you know, life just seems a little bit better when we can be more aligned with that, what I would say is our expanded self. So that's a couple of examples of kind of people that I've worked with.
I found it very interesting looking at your website and your blog. There was a piece on there, The Body's Hardwired for Truth, about a podcast that you'd listened to with John David Oates, who's the founder of the theory of reverse speech. And, you know, the theory is that, you know, if you play something backwards, you'll often hear truths that give the lie to what you were saying when you were playing it forward. And that in fact, when we are not telling the truth, our body knows it, and there's an increase in stress hormones. This is really interesting to me, and I can certainly understand that, but you also just raised the issue, which you know, expand on in your book, of past life issues. I mean, are you saying that if there's a past life issue that is at the root of something we're experiencing today, if we can uncover that, then we can heal that, because now our body's in alignment with truth.
I would hope so. I would have to say that past lives is not my real area of expertise, but I think we're going to be pulling things through. We're going to be pulling things through from other dimensions of space and time, I suspect. And I think that through really aligning and through feeling, if we can learn to really feel deeply, we can, I think there is the possibility of healing, because by shifting our vibration now, by aligning with the truth of who we are and flowing and shifting our frequency now, my sense is that we probably can, you know, heal what has happened in the past. We can change that frequency, which kind of resonates back through time. So, yeah, I do. It's a really interesting thing, isn't it, that idea that our body does know the truth. It's interesting, even if we look at science, what science will tell us is that many, many people are very detached from their own motivations, their own drives for why they do what they do. And we're even worse at detecting other people's. So, for the most part, you know, if we guess at why a person does something, most of the time we're wrong. But very often we don't know ourselves. And I guess this is why we have lots of scientists that say we kind of don't have free will, because there is that sense of, well, you know, people are just, they're just acting out. They're acting out their conditioning, their genetics, and all the rest of it. But I think it's wonderful to know that deep down your body knows, and your body knows if you are misaligned with your own truth. And if you let yourself feel, deeply feel, then you'll be able to pick that up. But we've got to get out of our heads long enough and get into our bodies and feel, you know, we've got to develop that skill, really. And when we do that, we can pick up on these things. But it's a bit of an ongoing journey.
I certainly agree that if we can get into a different frequency, things change. I do know many spiritual teachers who talk about illness, migraines, headaches, whatever, existing in a particular bandwidth. And if we can move our frequency beyond that bandwidth, then we do not experience whatever that problem was. You offer a series of exercises in your book to help achieve realignment with the true self and a state of high consciousness. Is there something that you could share with us now, something fairly quick that our listeners could utilize or work with at home?
I think that the simplest thing to do would be to, even, you know, for the next week, to simply allow whatever you feel to be okay. it's really interesting to me, the fact that we, as soon as people feel something uncomfortable, there is an almost like an instinct to block it or to analyze it or to try to find meaning in it. So a first step is to, even if you take a day, is to, for that day, have an intention that you're going to be curious about the physical sensations of what you feel. And without labeling it, without resisting it, without trying to solve it, just let it be and notice what happens to it. And it's when you begin to feel and allow it to feel, what's interesting is it tends to flow much, much more quickly, but there's not a level of suffering. Much of our suffering is self-imposed. And suffering is not the experience of an uncomfortable emotion like fear or anger or boredom or sadness, because they're just transient experiences, which, as I say, if you can get into your body and feel it as a physical sensation, which could be a tightness in your chest, it could be, you know, a fluttering in your stomach, but just being curious about those sensations, staying in the body, feeling it, being aware of how it moves, how it flows, and knowing, actually, having a knowledge or a belief that this is a good thing for me to do. Simply allowing myself to feel this is going to shift my vibration. I think a lot of spiritual people have a sense of, I don't do anger. You know, I'm manifesting this great life, and I feel great all the time. But what happens is that because anger, fear, and all the rest of it, they come to visit all of us because it's part of our experience. Usually what happens is we end up blocking them if we're in that kind of spiritual space of deciding that we're happy all the time. So I think the kind of irony is we keep our vibration low by doing that. I feel in order to elevate our vibration, we actually need to go through all of those experiences. And I think by doing so, you know, by diving in, I mean, that's what I do. I firmly believe that my vibration is shifting upwards by allowing myself to fully feel everything I feel. If I feel fear, I dive in. I have that sense of bring it on. You know, let me feel this as fully and as deeply as I can. And I do, and it kind of moves. And interestingly, with the absence of mental chatter and resistance and trying to solve it, it doesn't stick around that long. It's actually not as uncomfortable as you know. Sometimes it's not great, it's not nice, but allowing it to be there develops a resilience as well. So that would be my you know, step one is take a day or even a week if you're brave and have an intention that you're going to fully feel the physical sensations and stay out of your head while you're doing it.
I was interested when you talked about resilience earlier and how we seem to have lost our capacity for this. I interviewed recently a parenting and education expert in Australia, and she was saying that studies there had shown that many of the Maori children, the kids that lived on the line that had very little, were in poverty, actually had more resilience than privileged children. And it's interesting, you know, that the more privileged we get, the more we have, the less resilience we develop. Now, you've developed a special resilience training workshop that you present for businesses and corporations. And I read on your website that you can teach someone resilience in as short as 90 minutes. How do you do that?
I think resilience is inbuilt. As I say, you know, I think that my sense of it is that in terms of the kind of well-off children, you know, those affluent kids, I think that part of their resistance, part of their inability to be resilient is, as I said earlier, because they did completely deny themselves. I suspect there is this always having to be, you know, looking good, to be being happy, to be buzzing. They're probably on Facebook all of the time. So my experience of it is that affluent kids very often have problems for those reasons. I mean, there can be a host of other problems. You know, it's not unknown for kids of affluent parents to be, you know, to not have, you know, to have parents who are not emotionally available to them. And so, you know, so there's potentially a whole number of things. But in terms of your back to your question, I think that it's because I believe resilience is something that is inbuilt. We need, you know, there's a number of things that we need to do. There's physical resilience in terms of the environment, making sure we get enough sleep and these sorts of things, making you know, they're kind of four pillars of health, which is food, fitness, sleep and stress. But really, by beginning to direct our attention inwards and just paying attention to ourselves, I tell you what, in business, there are little things that make a difference, just like taking breaks and having lunch, you know. And it's all kind of top down, so you've got to be within an organization that supports that. But there are little things like people not having a lunch break because they don't think they should. It's where they're very externally referenced. They're acting as they think they should. And of course, we live in a culture where far too many of us do that. So by bringing attention back and just simply honoring the self in very little ways, which can be just taking breaks, and this can be, you know, in outside life as well. It's balancing energy to a large extent by paying attention to how I feel and knowing myself. And of course, we can only know ourselves through what we feel. And it's having that be okay. You know, that kind of goes back to that exercise where you allow yourself to feel what you feel. So yeah, it can be that, you know, you can teach people to be resilient. Well, certainly to begin with, reasonably quickly.
Very briefly, because we're almost out of time, you offer a 6-week online mind body mastery program. What does that entail?
It's my kind of mind body mastery work is addressing those four pillars of health. And it's kind of going deeper into all of the stuff I've talked about today, really. It's looking at the effect of emotions on health. It's looking at how we attune ourselves to our emotions. It's looking at how symptoms are feedback, because very often we get stuck in a revolving door of trying to figure out what's wrong with us, because most people live with a medicalized mindset, if that makes sense, whether it's, you know, they're looking at symptoms and trying to treat symptoms. So it's taking people on this journey back to the self, and it's using feelings as a way of doing that. But what energy flow coaching does is we're looking at three levels. We're looking at our environment, our interaction with our environment, and then our relationship with ourself. And when I say ourself, that's the flow of consciousness, kind of expanded self, true self idea. So we need to. So it's looking at all those areas. We need to be aware of the environment that we're in. Of course, we need to be aware of the food that we eat. We need to be aware of how much sleep we have, and what facilitates that and what hinders that. So I look to address all aspects of a person's life, but ultimately it's about them making the choices and developing the awareness of what is right for them. Recognizing that ultimately their experience of life is something that flows through them. I try to take people on a journey from thinking that life is happening to them to life is happening for them to life is happening through them to they are life. You know, as we look out the window and we see a flower open, that flower is life. Well, much like the experience that I'm having, that you're having, that all the listeners are having, that's life experiencing itself. So when we can begin to really feel that, then we're on that, you know, we're on the steps to mastery.
That's a perfect place to leave it. Carl Davis, thank you so much for joining us. The book, The Intelligent Body, Reversing Chronic Fatigue and Pain from the Inside Out, is published by W.W. Norton. For more information about Carl Davis and his work with Energy Flow Coaching, visit energyflowcoaching.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today. And I look forward to being with you at the same time next week, when I'll be talking to award-winning author, researcher, Dawson Church. Till then, it's goodbye from me.